What we did just now is called amisabuja, or paying homage with material things. Candles, incense, flowers. Now is the time for bhati-bhati bucha, or paying homage to the practice. Tonight's Visakha puja, the full moon of May. The Buddha was born on a full moon day in May. 35 years later, he gained awakening on a full moon day in May. And then 45 years after that, he entered total nibbana on a full moon day in May. So we're commemorating three events tonight, the major events in the Buddha's life. And as he said on his final night, the best way to pay homage to him, and we want to pay respect, we want to show our gratitude. So the best way to show that respect and to show that gratitude is through the practice. Or as he said, practicing the Dharma in line with the Dharma. Which means that we have to train our minds. So we sit here focusing on the breath. To train the mind in mindfulness, alertness, concentration, discernment, persistence, compassion for ourselves and others. All sorts of good qualities get gathered together here if we focus properly on the breath. Try to focus with a sense of ease as a way of showing compassion to yourself. We all want happiness, and so this is a good place to find it because it's something that's always there. And the happiness we find from the breath is something that we don't have to take away from anyone else. It doesn't place any burden on anyone else. No one else is going to try to steal it away from us. There's nobody going to come in and try to take the pleasure from a comfortable breath away from us. This is our own territory here. And so you want to make the most of it. So that's compassion. To stay with the breath requires mindfulness, keeping it in mind, remembering that this is what you want to do. You want to stay here with the breath. You don't want to spend the hour with your mind wandering all over the place, because that wouldn't be in line with the Dharma. It might be in line with your defilements, but that's what it means to be practicing the Dharma in line with the Dharma, is that you have to change yourself to be in line with the Dharma. You don't want to change the Dharma to be in line with your own ideas. We followed our whims, we followed our desires for who knows how long. And where does it get us? It gets us into more suffering. So now it's time to bring the mind into line, keeping it with the breath. Wherever it branches out, you just have to cut off that branch and come right back to the breath. Or actually, you don't have to cut it, just let it go. No, don't pay any attention to it, don't follow it. It'll die on its own. Just keep coming back to the breath. Each time you come back, reward yourself with a good, comfortable breath. Something feels really good deep down inside. Is there any part of the body that seems to be deprived of breath energy? Think of opening it up and the breath penetrating in. So you can touch the Dharma with the body. It's an expression the Buddha uses to describe the mind in concentration. A sense of well-being that's not just in your head, it's throughout the body. You develop alertness, watching what's going on to check, make sure that everything is where you want it. And if it's not, you can change. And this way the mind develops concentration, thinking about the breath and evaluating the breath, being totally focused on issues of the breath. To give rise to a sense of ease, well-being, rapture, fullness. This is a good thing about practicing the Dharma in line with the Dharma. It's not the case that the Buddha is going to gain anything from it. We're the ones who gain from it. And it's a sign of his great compassion. He dedicated his life to finding the Dharma so that he could find true happiness and then teach it to others so they could find true happiness for themselves through their own actions, through training their minds. And so this is the way we show our respect and gratitude for that intention. is by taking the teachings he gave us for the purpose of training our minds, for the purpose of finding out true happiness within. And even though our greed, anger, and delusion may have other ideas about where true happiness might be found, we've followed them long enough. We've associated with them long enough. We've listened to them, followed them. And where do they take us? Just back to more and more suffering again and again and again. And yet we never seem to learn. So now we are trying to learn. What would be a better way of finding happiness? And so even though we don't have absolute proof that what the Buddha said was true, at least it sounds reasonable. We've seen other people who received good results from the practice. So we give it a try. We give them a fair hearing. And we give the Dharma a fair test. Now, to test the Dharma requires that you be genuine in your practice, be true in your practice. In other words, you really do what the Buddha recommended. Because if you're going to test it, you have to give it a fair test. Right before he died, he gave his last teaching on being heedful to remind us of our motivation for doing the practice. Because if we don't do it, we'll just keep going around and around and around, doing all kinds of unskillful things, saying unskillful things, thinking unskillful things, and then having to suffer the results, and then come back and say, well, maybe let's try it again. If we keep going around and around like this, it's a sad affair. Because we're not the only ones who suffer. We create lots of suffering for the people around us, too. Each time you're born, you need food, clothing, shelter, medicine. As a human being, you need care. And all this places a burden on other people. This is what the Buddha said. The path to the end of birth, aging, illness, and death is a path of compassion, both for yourself and the people around you. So you want to be heedful about how you do that. To be really careful in doing it right. Then right before the Buddha gave that final instruction on heedfulness, he asked everyone, are there any questions? You think about it, it's pretty amazing. The person's about to die, and he asks for any last questions. He stated his offer three times to show that he was serious. And then he said, well, if there are any monks who are embarrassed about speaking up in front of everybody else, you can talk to a friend sitting next to you. Still nobody spoke. Ananda said to the Buddha, I'm convinced that there's no one here who's anything less than a stream enter. No one has any doubts. And the Buddha said, well, you speak out of conviction. The Buddha said, I speak out of knowledge. It's true. The most backward of the monks there was a stream enter, seeing his first taste of awakening. What's important about this incident is that it shows the importance of questioning. The Buddha was open to questions. But also meant he wanted you to be open to questions as well, to ask yourself, to grill yourself about what you're doing. He called this process cross-questioning. You cross-question the teacher, and then the teacher cross-questions you, and then you want to learn how to cross-question yourself. And you develop all kinds of important qualities this way, but two in particular, mindfulness and alertness. Sometimes people would ask the Buddha a question before he gave the answer. He'd cross-question about something that they were familiar with, something they already understood, and then show that what they already understood would give them some insight into what they were doing in the meditation. For example, someone asked him, why is it that when some people receive your instructions, they gain awakening, and other people receive your instructions and they don't? The implication being that the Buddha was being unfair, being biased, giving awakening to some people and not to others. But the Buddha asked the man, have you ever given instruction? Have you ever given directions to anyone? And the man said, yes. And the road from here to Rajagaha. Can you tell people how to get there? The man said, yes. And he gave a description of the route to follow. And the Buddha said, okay, when you give these instructions to people, do all the people who receive your instructions get to Rajagaha? And he said, well, no, sometimes they take a wrong turn. They end up way out west. But then, as the man said, what can I do? I gave the same instructions to everyone. Some people listened and followed them, other people didn't. The Buddha said, well, in the same way, when he gives teachings to people, it's like giving directions on a path. Some people will follow the directions and get to the results at the end. Other people won't follow the instructions, so they won't get the results. So this kind of cross-questioning tries to make you remember lessons you've learned from life that you can apply to your practice. This is one of the functions of mindfulness. When you come up against an issue in your practice, you can ask yourself, what have I learned from the past that can help me with this problem right now? That's one kind of cross-questioning. Another is just look at what you're doing right now. What kind of results are you getting? Are they good? Is the mind settling down as you'd like it to? How about if you changed? If it's not settling down, what could you do to get it to settle down? Once it's settled down, what can you do to keep it alert? When it's steady and alert, what can you do to see if there's still any further work to be done? Any inconstancy in your concentration? Any stress? What can you do to let go of that? In other words, you let go of the cause, stop the cause, so the mind can get even more and more steady, more and more grounded. This kind of cross-questioning develops alertness. And mindfulness and alertness are the basic factors that we have to bring to our mindfulness practice, bring to the concentration practice. And so they involve questioning. It's not just doing what you're told. And the Buddha talks about practicing the Dharma in line with the Dharma. It doesn't mean just following the instructions blindly. You have to look and check and see what the results are that you're getting. And if they're not, what can you do to bring your actions even further in line with the Dharma? So that you really do get the results that the Buddha promised, the happiness that's totally unconditioned, that's not subject to inconstancy or stress or not-self. So this practicing the Dharma in the line with the Dharma, on the one hand, it does mean that you have to submit to instructions. And many times you do things that the mind doesn't want to do. The mind wants to wander around and look at the flowers, look at the sky, play games with whatever little animals it finds along the path. But no, we've got work to do. If we don't develop these qualities in mind, there are a lot of problems down the line. Lapses in our mindfulness, big blank spaces in our alertness. We can end up doing all kinds of harmful things. Because when the mind's sense of well-being is not really solid, events can change and the mind changes with those events. As long as society is relatively peaceful, relatively calm, we don't see that there's any opportunity for us that we'd actually do evil in any way. But say things start falling apart. Food is hard to come by. Water is hard to come by. Basic necessities of life get harder and harder. And some people will turn to killing and stealing, lying and all other kinds of harmful activities because that's the only happiness they know. You have to ask yourself, can you guarantee that you wouldn't fall into that pattern yourself? And the only way you can really guarantee it is if you found something really solid inside, where your confidence in the Buddha has been verified in your practice. This is what heedfulness means, realizing that the mind is capable of all kinds of things. So you want to develop the qualities that will ensure that what you're capable of is all good, and the things that you see as unskillful, as harmful, you're not going to be capable of doing them. You wouldn't want to go near. So on the one hand, the practice of the Dharma in line with the Dharma means following the Buddha's instructions. But the Buddha's instructions also have you question what you're doing. call to mind lessons you've learned from the past. Examine what you're doing in the present moment. So your test of the Buddha's teachings gets better results. It becomes a genuine test, a fair test, in which you test yourself as well. So when you find that you're true, the Dharma becomes true for you as well. And we find that the more we practice the Dharma, the more we do want to pay homage to the Buddha, the more gratitude we want to show him. Because the good things he taught, the good things that he discovered, are not just sort of casual things that anybody can pick up. It required a really special person, a really dedicated person to find them. And so we want to show our gratitude and respect for that dedication. Because it's because of the Buddha's dedication that we're here practicing, that we have this opportunity. Without him, where would we be right now? It's because we have him as our admirable friend, as he said it, that we're able to let go of the causes of suffering and stress and find a measure of true happiness. And the more we devote ourselves to this practice of the Dharma in line with the Dharma, questioning our actions, using this process of questioning to develop further mindfulness, further alertness, further integrity, we'll find that what the Buddha taught is something that's really beyond price.